Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are in your ears thanks to the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last night it didn't go according to plan as we left it late once again against that lot from up the road. But it could have been all so different had Pascal Gross not missed a penalty and we'd made our dominance count. That game followed, of course, from last week's win at West Brom after extra time. And the draw has paired us with Spurs and the TV companies have conspired to once again make it very difficult for us to go to a game of football. Joining me today, of course, is Alan Wares. And we're delighted to be joined by the Guardian's Palace supporting reporter Ed Aarons, who also presents the Made in Africa pod. And we're also delighted to welcome back Vicky Rees. Well, morning, everybody. How are we all?
Morning, good.
Good, thanks. How are you?
Well, you might be able to hear from the sound of my voice. I'm feeling a little bit jaded right now.
But, well, I'm going to say that we're recording this on Saturday. Normally, we record our show on Friday afternoon, where AD's voice is croaky because he's been working and talking on the telephone to clients all day, but it's first thing in the morning because no one got home before midnight, let's put it that way. So, I mean, Ed, let's start with you. I mean, whereabouts are you and how much fun did you have getting home?
Well, I am in not far off from Crystal Palace, actually, the stadium. So, yeah, I mean, it's the 43 miles, the full 43 miles right back. And it took me not much more than an hour. But as you know, around the ground, it's always a bit difficult getting out with a car. I think I was back at about half midnight, yeah, something like that.
I mean, Vicky, yeah, you were fun and games with your transport arrangements yesterday as well, didn't you? With the drivers going the wrong way and things.
Yeah. Is that right? I didn't see what happened.
When you get a new coach driving, he's ever so nice, but yeah, he got a bit lost en route. So I mean, we had loads of time. We were in plenty of time last night for the game, so we weren't really sweating on it, but certainly I had a magical mystery tour of Burgess Hill.
Yeah, including, as Vicky pointed out in a message to us, if you remember that scene from Austin Powers where he gets stuck in his little mini buggy, trying to perform a 78-point turn in no space at all. Is that kind of thing that happened in and of all places, oh, Burgess Hill?
That was when we got to the Amex car park. He was trying to manoeuvre the coach into a space. And I, as I said, I think it was a bit of an Austin Powers.
Okay, but before we get into the nuts and bolts of last night, Ed, I mentioned in the intro that you also do the Made in Africa pod, which is great. I've been listening to that, and it's obviously AFCON's going on at the moment. We've got Yves Bissouma over there. You've got our pantomime villain over there as well.
No, joking. Sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, it's got off to a weird start, really, hasn't it? I mean, it's not. I mean, the group phase is pretty much everyone qualifies for the next stage. It seems to me.
Yeah, it's. I think the second round of matches already have been quite good. And I think that thing's probably going to continue because, yeah, like you say, most teams get through. Only eight are eliminated in the first round, so you have quite a few, you know, sort of sides that have already booked their places. But I think once the knockout stages get going next week, it should be really exciting.
Yeah,
and Neves' team. They've sort of outsiders. They had a good start. They've got some really good players, and it's good to see him. Well, not from a Brighton point of view, obviously, but I think from the players' point of view, it's good to see him back in international football.
I mean, I was speaking to you a lot last season at the games, and he's a player that you really, really rate, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not just me. I think everybody, you know, anyone who watches him has watched him the last couple of years. You can't really fail to have been impressed by him.
Mm. And his team, of course, is. I mean, they have got an advantage in the AFCON in the fact that their games only seem to be 85 minutes long.
What happened there?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's still kind of not. No one really knows what happened. I couldn't believe when I was watching it. I've never seen anything like that. And yeah, the referee, I think he, you know, personally wasn't feeling very well, didn't he? But
I was about to say, was there an aftermath to it? Was there a follow up to it?
There hasn't been yet. I think they're investigating what happened, but I can't imagine he's going to officiate again, certainly in this tournament. But yeah, we'll see. He was from Zambia, actually.
Sorry?
He was from Zambia, actually.
Oh, and Zambia's our country of choice at the moment. You know, there's a bit of loving going on with the Zambians. I do remember the similar thing happening back in the 80s, a game. It was one of those that was... It's just one of those things that stays with you, an arbitrary thing, watching the big match, and it was Fulham against someone else in the third division, and the referee stopped the game about 8 minutes early. His watches all had broken. The stadium clock didn't help because that was 5 minutes fast. And I think it was an end of season one where the fans actually came onto the pitch and Fulham had got promotion and they had to clear the pitch again and play the last 8 minutes. And I think actually it's now the case that the rules are that if something like that, not the referee having a brain fart, but if something like a pitch invasion happens and you can't then get the game restarted, then if it's after 85 minutes, I think something like that, then the result stands. Does that sound right to anyone?
I'd be surprised in a game that was only 1-0, because I think a team would have a considerable argument there if it was only 1-0. If it was 3 or 4-0, you'd get it. But I thought it was only Reading fans that did premature pitch invasions, but there we go.
Yeah, well, don't forget Man United scored against us after the final whistle last season as well. So, I mean, it's...
You're not going to forget that, are you?
I'm not going to forget. It's just...
Angry.
Annoying.
Was that the game you were at?
I was at that game, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Ed was there, and you were there as well, weren't you, Ed? That Man United game?
United game. I don't think I was. I was. Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, they're so forgettable, weren't they, in lockdown, the games? You just you'll blend into one. But yeah, I think I was there, I remember.
But, let's face it, the professional within you would have gone, well, this was unusual. The person within you would have gone, but...
Well, you know, I don't know about that. No, I think when you're doing a match report and it's a late goal, you don't care who scored it. You just curse whoever scored it. Even if Palace score in the last minute, I'm not happy. Trust me.
Actually, we've had
so covering Brighton games isn't a nightmare for you at the moment. Well, then,
exactly. No, you know, I mean, I don't know if you want to get into this now, but yesterday's one you have to file on the whistle. So I wrote my intro with Palace, you know, winning third in a row. I'm sure you'll love this. And but knowing full well that I would have to get rid of it, but you know, I did it anyway. It went into the great intro death in the sky.
Yes, I think I think Brian Owen AD has told us about this before, that you know, when it comes to last, all the stuff they've written, all the sort of like the 500 words or whatever it might be, it's actually not the rest of it. It's just the intro, isn't it? You need the headline stuff. That's the bit that changes, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends, because we're up against it for the first edition, especially with the game, you know, 8 p.m. kickoff. It finishes, I think last night's final whistle was at like 9:56 or something.
Yeah.
So we've got to send our first edition at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
So I've got to send it. Well, I should really send it before that, but obviously last night I couldn't send it until the very end, because it was in the balance, wasn't it, till the very end. So I had to send it in, you know, and write it within, I think it was 3 minutes before the end, wasn't it? The equaliser. So
yeah.
Sure. Well, very, if you look at Brighton's recent record, I mean, especially in London, but certainly against London teams, I think that probably every writer now has got to realise, actually, it's not worth writing my copy on account of the fact that Brighton always equalise in the 93rd minute anyway. So,
absolutely.
There's a quarter of hell for you guys.
It's not much you can do about it, though, really. You have to have something there, and you just have to, you know, maybe try and do an alternative, or hope and pray.
Just for the fact of actually, right, Neil Maupay is going to equalise on 93 minutes. Here's my alternate copy. Whether it happens or not is another matter.
Well, I think I was thinking I could have written it in the daytime, like predicting what would have happened, you know, and then just gone back to that when, you know, when it did.
I think we all pretty much knew what was going to happen. I mean, it wasn't quite a carbon copy of last season, because we actually hang on for a point, but it was. Let's get into it.
Hang on, Ed, we'll dissect the game, but I do want to carry on, because we kind of segue out of this. But I want to carry on talking about Ed's Africa correspondent. So how did you get into being the Africa football correspondent?
It's a long story, but basically I in 2009, I went to live in South Africa before the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Because it was the first World Cup that was going to be held in Africa, and I thought it was a fantastic occasion. I wanted to be there, and I've always been interested in African football anyway, so it made sense to go and do that. And yeah, since I came back, I was there for 2 years, and since I came back, I've, you know, continued to take a strong interest in it and met lots of different people over there that I continue to, you know, sort of work with.
Yeah.
And yeah, and ever since then, I've kind of kept a special eye on Premier League players, African players in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in the book that I wrote that came out a couple of years ago.
Made in Africa, wasn't it?
Give us a plug, Ed. Go on, plug it.
Yeah, it's called Made in Africa, The History of African Players in English Football. So it goes way back into the 19th century, back to Arthur Walton.
Go on, do tell.
Yeah, he was from Ghana. And he was a goalkeeper. He played for Sheffield United in the 19th century. And yeah, he was the first African player to play in English football. And yeah, it traces the story really from him to the modern day. So, you know, there wasn't many African players until the 90s, really. But actually, I don't know if you're aware that there was a couple of Zambians who were Aston Villa
at the
same time. And I spoke to, when I did something about Enoch and Patson Daka, made the comparison between those two, although they're not the same club. Mm. You know, Freddie Mwila and Emmett Mpengwe, Kapengwe, his name was. And they were signed by Tommy Doherty in the late 60s, and well, I think they made like three appearances between them eventually. It didn't quite work out.
Yeah, they ended up in America, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. And I think they signed them in America, and then they went straight back there afterwards. I think they were decent players, but just for whatever reason didn't quite work out. But yeah, so it's good to see that Enoch and Patson following in their footsteps.
I mean, obviously, those two, obviously, they've been together for a long time. They grew up together. And obviously, Lee Kuanu, who's been on your show, was their mentor and sort of that they got to Europe by the time they were 18, which was a promise he made to them. So, I mean, do you think that they will ever get back together again? I mean, obviously, Patson he's had an okay start to his Leicester career, but he's not a regular by any stretch of the imagination. So maybe, just maybe,
in mind, AD, that you could say that an outsider looking in about Enoch, he's not a regular starter. Now the fact is he's still a little bit injured. And I'm just wondering actually if it's the increased pressure of you know the stress and tensions of the Premier League. That's not to say that Austria or even playing in the Champions League is necessarily going to be sort of an easy ride for him. But I'm just wondering if the stresses and tensions, because he's got a hamstring injury at the moment and Christ alone knows how long that's going to be him out for. But, you know, an outsider could say, well, Enoch's not started putting up trees. And yet when we've seen him play, and I don't know if you've seen him play, Ed, for us, you know, there's certainly something about him, even though he's probably only about a dozen games into his Albion career.
That's great. Yeah, I agree. I think he's been very impressive. I know the people at Brighton. I know a couple of people in the staff there. I know that people are very impressed with him, and perhaps he's ahead of where they expected him at this stage. You know, he's made a lot more starts and appearances than maybe people expected. And I know that's something that Lee, his mentor, said to him when he came, and to Patson as well. You need to be really patient in the first year because it's going to be tough for you to get in the team.
It's a similar path to Ibe Bissouma. You know, he was brought in, and when people saw him first time, it was, well, hang on, this bloke's a bit wild. He's a bit sort of, and you see him, and it takes, and it's kind of fascinating for all of us to watch the integration of not necessarily an African player, but, you know, sort of a non-Brit who's not necessarily been brought up on the speed of the Premier League. And you see that kind of improvement, and we've seen it year on year. And when we've been talking to Liverpool fans who are really, really keen on him, you know, think, oh, we'll put in a bid for him. And I'm saying, well, fine, do if that's what your club want to do. But I don't think the bloke's quite ready. This season, I think he might be. But again, this is the kind of the fascination you have is the advancement of any given player once they arrive in the Premier League, in which to them is a horribly foreign land and culture, isn't it, Ed?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And I think with African players, although it's kind of it's got better than it used to be, they have tended to take a bit longer to settle in. But I think in both Pat's and Enoch's cases, they can be really happy with the impact they've made in the first 6 months, really. But I was just going to say, on Patson and Enoch being together, I think perhaps he's exactly what Brighton need. Somebody like him. Like a proper number. Not doing in Neil Mopé, because I think he's really good. He's a decent player as well. And gives quite a bit. And he's doing really well this season. But I think if you had somebody like Patson, as you know, an out-and-out number nine goal scorer, could make a massive difference for Brighton. And could, you know, really move you on to the next level, actually.
Okay. I mean, Ed, guns ahead. Won't you go, going back to the AFCON again, who's going to win it? Who's your favourite?
Big one. Well, I said before the tournament, after, I don't know if you heard our preview, I was really talked around towards Mali, actually. And I've always had a bit of a soft spot for them. They produce a lot of great young players. And hopefully, I think they could shock a few people. Maybe not go all the way, but certainly to the latter stages. My heart says I'd like to see Senegal win it, but having watched them yesterday and then in the first match, they were not very impressive. I'd like them to win their first trophy. They've never won it before. But it's really open. I mean, Cameroon have looked the best so far. They're the hosts, obviously, and they're going to be really tough to beat at home. But there's quite a few contenders, you know, even Ivory Coast, if I'm allowed to mention them.
Ed, you're sitting on the fence here, mate. Come on.
If I had to go for one before the tournament, I said Senegal.
Fair enough.
But I have to say, excuse me, I have to stick with that. But they need to improve, definitely.
Obviously, we're hoping that Mali crash and burn and he's coming home very, very early.
Yeah.
it was. I mean, let's move on to last night, Ed. I mean, it was the second game against you lot in a row where Eves was missing, and he really was missing, I think, from our point of view.
It's kind of a trade-off, AD, isn't it? I mean, you think. I'm just curious here, because what Ed would think here, and Vicky as well, actually, is the trade-off is, right, we had Basuma missing, Palace had Zaha missing. And I can't help feeling, as much as he's been our bete noir, he's been our pantomime villain, that Zaha's influence on the team isn't as strong. Don't get me wrong, he's still there to be, you know, a pain in the neck to any given opposition, but I don't think Palace seem to be relying on him quite as much as they would have done, say, 3 or 4 years ago. I'd like to hear your view on that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, 100% correct. But, you know, he's still very, very influential, very important. But, yeah, last night I'd actually not forgotten he wasn't there because, obviously, you know, but it was... He was missed by Palace yesterday, though, absolutely, because they couldn't get out of their own half. And I just wanted to say that the difference between the two games, I thought, was, you know, in the first game, Palace, I was really surprised, actually, because it was, you know, Vieira's first game against Brighton. And Palace kind of held their own in midfield. I wouldn't say dominated, but it was, you know, maybe 50-50. Whereas last night, it was complete domination by Brighton. Mm. And, you know, and I think James McArthur not being around for the last few weeks has been a big miss for Palace. The engine room. Him and Conor Gallagher were brilliant in that first game at Selhurst Park.
So would you say it was a point gained then, given all those circumstances then, Ed?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And Vieira was I think he was quite pleased afterwards with just having got a point. Even though, you know, 3 minutes to go, you're winning the match. Not perfect, but he knew that Palace got away with it a bit yesterday.
Vicky, do you think? I mean, in the trade-off of Bissouma against Palace, who missed out more, do you think?
It's a funny one, because I think, obviously, we knew Bissouma wasn't going to be there, and then we'd all had in our minds, because Mwepu's played so well recently, we all thought, fine, great, we've got Mwepu, we can cope with that, because Mwepu played against Brentford, I think it was, won that game, played well. And then, of course, he gets injured, and I think most of us were going into that game last night thinking, how on earth are we going to control the defensive side of midfield? You know, and that was a real concern. And then sort of a combination of Modder, McAllister and Lallana before he went off. I thought for me, that was probably Modder's best game for us. It wasn't really the defensive side of it. I just thought generally he was very good. McAllister's really coming into his own now. I was surprised at how much we dominated the midfield. I thought with Hughes and Gallagher in there, I thought Palace would be a little bit more energetic in midfield, certainly this season, than they were last season. I know we dominated that game, but I did feel it was a very, it was still a very different game to the defeat at the Amex last season.
Yeah.
Last season's Palace in that game were just awful. It was a classic Hodgson, come out here, hope for a draw. Obviously, they've somehow scored with their only two shots. I mean, admittedly, they did score with their only two shots last night. But they, you know, I thought it was a different game. I thought Palace were a better side. And I thought the fact that Palace looked worse was more down to us this year than it was down to Palace being really poor like they were last season.
Yeah, I mean, going into the game, Al, when we were discussing that we were concerned that we were going into it with Lallana and Gross in the midfield, again, like we did Sellers earlier in the season, where we completely lost the midfield battle. But it was a different formation, wasn't it?
Well, it's interesting that Ed's saying he thought that the game earlier in the season was 50-50 in the midfield. Certainly in the first half, I actually thought in that game up at Sellers, I thought Palace completely dominated the midfield. And I think that was a tactical decision that Graham Potter had got wrong. We played five at the back and only left two in midfield. And that midfield was overrun. And he changed it in the second half, took Dan Burn off at halftime, put Stephen Alzate on. So it's actually, it makes it sound more attacking, but all it was doing was flooding the midfield a bit better. And as a result, then that second half was more 50-50. I don't think he was going to look to make that same mistake last night. And so again, started with a flat back four and had a midfield, which, and also given there's, I think there's, the tails are up slightly as well. The weird thing is that I'm not that worried about Pascal Gross when I see his name on the team sheet. But then when you look at it in hindsight, you realise what a relatively poor game he had. Now, admittedly, he's not played too many games recently, and he is going to get the pelters for what was a really woefully taken penalty. But as we all know, you know, I've seen a milk float go faster than Pascal Gross. We know he's not a quick player, but that's not to point the finger at him. It is a midfield that actually could and did work. And he played his part in there. So in mentioning Lallana, who, let's face it, is getting on a bit and can and is prone to the odd injury, the odd knock, and we got that last night. And then, weirdly enough, who comes on instead of him? It's Tarik Lamptey. And he goes to a flat back five. It's a five, but actually it's really a three with Cucurella and Lamptey bombing on. So what I really like about that is the fluidity. Even though we've got some players missing, is the fluidity with which we can actually carry on playing the game. So that lineup, when you see it, it is good enough to, it's actually good enough to challenge and go through most teams. It's just a case of actually then sticking the ball in the net.
Yeah, the cutting edge. Ed, I mean, were you concerned for your team when you started time wasting in the eighth minute?
Yeah, I think I probably was, to be honest. Yeah, I thought Palace actually, although Brighton were totally dominant, I have to admit, and, you know, can consider themselves unlucky, I suppose, not to have been ahead at half-time. But actually, how many chances did they create? And you guys know this. You watch it every week, and I watch Brighton a fair bit as well. And they're great. They're great to watch. They actually can go toe-to-toe with pretty much anyone in midfield, like almost anyone, apart from the top. Well, even sometimes the top four, you know.
Probably not City, but Chelsea certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like last week, you match them in midfield at least, or if not, dominate possession.
Yeah.
But it's just that final ball, you know, as we're talking about Patson Daka, someone to put the ball in there. I don't know. Even it's not as if Mopé didn't work his socks off and wasn't trying to create opportunities. It's just that, I don't know, that half yard or something special that you need in those situations.
It's the decision making at a given moment, isn't it? It's the case of whether, because I mean, towards the end of the game there, I mean, it was noticeable that you could see that the ball into the box from outside was the preferred method, but they kept fannying about with it. You had Solly March trying to beat his man, Tarik Lamptey, and then it goes across the area to Cucurella on the other side. And it's almost as if they're trying to actually set themselves up for that perfect position, for that perfect cross.
Yeah.
And sometimes, just sometimes, I know it's Premier League and I know they're going to do it by means of quality, but sometimes, just now and again, and it really makes me sound like a kind of a third division fan from the 80s, just getting in there.
Vicky?
Well, I think, yeah, one thing that was really notable for me last night and a different sort of set up to previous games was the targeting of the Palace fullbacks. And I thought, because we don't normally hit a lot of long balls, but there was a lot of long passes going, particularly to our right side, where Terrick Mitchell, I think is his name, the Palace left back. Forgive me if I pronounce his first name wrong. But he, I mean, I thought he looked like a real weak link in that side last night. And everything was going down the right hand, at the Albion right hand side. And there was a lot of long, so somebody's clearly, from the sheer number of balls, somebody's clearly identified that that's a weak point. And I think, you know, probably because, well, we didn't have a lot of pace down there, but I think, you know, Cucurella going down the other side would have been another option, because I don't think Joel Ward really is the best. But I mean, Mitchell, I thought, had a really, let's be kind and say he had a very difficult half. Yeah. It wasn't much better in the second half, to be fair, especially once Lamptey got on the pitch. But that was quite noticeable from us, that they were hitting a lot of balls through the back. I thought Anderson had a fairly decent game, apart from his hilarious late clearance. Gehi, I thought, not sure about him. I still think he's perhaps a little bit, he's still young, isn't he? Still inexperienced. Yeah. I thought Palace's defence, I know they've improved it in terms of a couple of signings this season. I think the fullbacks are still a weak link, and I don't think they're as strong. I mean, to be fair, at the end, you know, we're chasing that goal, and there's still a bit of the Roy Hodgson, isn't there? And there's still a bit of that solidity as a defensive unit when the midfield. You saw how deep they were right at the end there when they were sort of hanging on. But did we actually look like scoring? I suppose Butland made a couple of good saves there, but
yeah, that was, I thought Butland was doing great actually.
Organisation, it hasn't lifted them completely.
And that was something I was going to ask you, Ed. I mean, Jack Butland was selected ahead of Guaita yesterday, and I thought Butland was great. I thought he was really good.
Yeah, he was, and I don't know if you guys realise. Well, we were on Saturday. Palace obviously had the other derby.
Against there's another one.
Yeah. Well, the one that's the local one, actually.
Yeah, it's a proper derby. Yeah.
6 miles apart, obviously Jack Butland didn't have the best of days.
No,
giving a goal away. But it was interesting that after that, Vieira said sort of backed him very strongly and picked him again last night, even though Guaita was on the bench because he's had a dislocated finger. He's been on the bench but not been playing, which is an odd one, I think. But great to see Jack Butland. You know, his career has kind of fallen off a cliff the last few years, and you know, after being an England player back in the day. And I thought he was really good, actually. Especially the first save, you know, the early one.
One from Trossard.
Yeah. I thought that was a really good save. You know, he spread himself really well. Obviously, the penalty was pretty simple.
It was. But I think we could have all stopped that one.
Yeah.
I think his kicking might be an issue for you, though. I mean, we'll ignore the Millwall thing because that was...
No, you're right about that, definitely. Yeah, it worked.
There was quite a few last night where he's either hoofed his kick out or he scuffed it up. I don't know if they do any practicing of his kicking with him, but that might be. It's quite unusual for a Premier League keeper these days, isn't it, to be not very good with his feet.
That's one thing about Ward, and not so much Mitchell actually, but Ward. Although, you know, he was the Palace goal yesterday was brilliant, I thought, and Ward was right at the start, the heart of it. But generally, you're right. He is a bit of a weak link. Especially, you know, with passing the ball out from back. They started this season trying this new style, and it was a joke the first couple of games. Like, especially, it ended up with Ward, and he just whack it out, basically. You know, do with it. But it's really, they've improved a lot. They've got the hang of it, and that goal that they scored was superb. It was, you know, they almost, in fact, Guay almost gave the ball away. If you watch it back, he almost gave the ball away at the start of it, and Brighton would have been in, and it would. But he just dribbled, just managed to keep it, and 22 passes later.
It was a terrible goal from our perspective. Yeah, I mean, no one put a tackle in. No one drew a foul. It was preventable.
From your point of view, definitely. But yeah, Mitchell's been one of our most consistent performers this season. You know, and that made him look ordinary. He's a good player. He's not a weakness normally. So it's just a credit to Brighton. I think that, you know, pushed him right back.
If we are going to applaud Ward's role in the Palace goal, I think I'd also like to applaud his role in our goal. Thank you very much. Very kind of him.
Fair enough.
So, fair play.
Oh, can I also just point out that actually, I think it must say something for Patrick Vieira's management skills and management style. I mean, let's say that drop tee he made against Millwall last week, you know, it was a howler, and especially in the cauldron of a local derby like that. That's all right. There might have been a third choice keeper to go to or not, but when you make a howler like that, and then you're dropped, you're going to sit on that mistake until such time as you next get a chance to rectify it. And it could have been, you know, another 6 months, even a year down the line before he'd have got back into the first team. So I think it's fair enough to Vieira to say, look, yeah, all right, you made a mistake. You know, try and, you know, have a much better game for it. And I think, like I say, a couple of a few kicking scuffs aside, I want to say, I mean, AD was saying he was, you know, sort of huge and a beast last night. But I just don't recall, apart from the Trossard one, which I think we were all thinking was offside, and then realised later when we looked at it, he was onside, which doesn't make us feel better.
Trossard, Moda was through, and he was out to block. There was a few, and basically he dominated the box the same as Sanchez does. When the balls were coming in there, it was something we're not used to seeing. But okay, well let's get into the controversies then, Ed. I mean, I don't think there's anything too controversial about the penalty apart from the fact that nobody spotted it at the time.
No, I agree. It was a penalty. I don't know what Will Hughes is really up to there. It was like a headlock, really. Wrestling.
Was it Dan Byrne?
It was Veltman.
Yeah. Okay.
Joel.
Reach Byrne.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
But Veltman was excellent, wasn't he? I thought he would be good. I think he helped pin Mitchell back at the start. I know it doesn't give you the same attacking intensity as Lamptey when he comes on, but I just thought he's a good player as well. It's, you know, you've got two great options there.
He's kind of gone under the radar a little bit, probably because he's one of those. It may be the case. We got him so damn cheap, you know, 900 grand from Ajax. You know what are Ajax doing offloading? Well, a current Dutch international to a Premier League side, known full well that they can get decent money for him. You know, it's. I think I was asked this earlier this week by a Polish journalist. Who's your best signing? And of the current squad, if you're going to have to put it in terms of a not necessarily the best player, but in terms of how much they cost, then Joel Veltman, who really is actually, you know, it's the modern day equivalent of Gary Hart's £1,000 and a set of tracksuit, because, you know, he's really, really has come on leaps and bounds. But yes, sorry, getting back to the VAR thing, like I say, no one saw it. And then when he saw it on the screen, think, blimey, you know, it was quite a throttle, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Vicky. I mean, you were particularly impressed with Will Hughes' general demeanour last night, anyway, weren't you?
Well, he's always been a bit of a bête noir for us, hasn't he? Over the years, you know, he's one of those players, isn't he? I won't use the term for him on your radio show, but you know what I mean. An outhouse. Let's call him an outhouse.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
He's been there even when he was 16 and playing for Derby. And if I ever thought there was a club he was going to end up at, it was always going to be Palace, wasn't it? And I think, you know, I think Zaha seems to be on a sort of gradual downward slope now, apart from obviously scoring the odd penalty against us. But, if he's starting to wind down a little bit, he's 30 this year, I think, isn't he? I think the likes of Hughes is probably going to be the next pantomime villain, if you like. You know, he is a decent player. He is a wind-up merchant. But yeah, I guess he didn't have the last laugh last night. But yeah,
every club loves having their own wind up merchants. I mean, we've got someone at the top of the tree there, really, haven't we, Vicky?
Got Morpay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But Vic, you say that. Sorry,
Ed wants to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say about Will Hughes. He could have been sent off yesterday, couldn't he?
Yeah,
the penalty. It could have been a yellow car, couldn't it? It was a headlock. And then that silly tackle that got everybody quite annoyed, didn't it, in the stadium? It was just silly. I think it was
a lunge, was it? I mean, the only thing that it was the only thing that sort of spared him a red card, I think, is probably because it wasn't stud showing. He didn't go flying in studs up. It was just a late lunge. But yeah, that's kind of hot head he is, isn't it? It's just
I have to say he's been very good for Palace since he signed. He had to wait quite a long time to get a proper chance. It was when MacArthur got injured. And since then he's been in and he hasn't been out. He's a good player. But yeah, I think
he'll be good for you.
Yeah, he's Easy to spot. I think that's why.
But Vicky, you were talking about Hughes being the pantomime villain. I mean, I personally thought that the heir apparent to Wilf's gravity problem was Elise last night, because he was a little bit cheaty but cheaty face, wasn't he? Let's face it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's. I don't know if that's a. I think the thing is with the likes of Hughes, and obviously Zaha gets it. You know what I'm saying? Zaha gets this game. He gets the rivalry, if you want to call it that. And so he knows all about it. Hughes probably will go down that route as well. And I'm sure Gallagher, if, you know, as long as he's at Palace, he'll probably be similar. I don't think Elise necessarily gets it. I think that's probably just the way he plays, because, you know, I seem to remember hearing last season there was some games of his for Reading when he was winding up opposition supporters. I don't necessarily think it was a Brighton thing. I think that's probably just the way he is. I won't lie. I was fearful of him last night. When you see their team and you think, OK, they've got Elise, they've got Eze, they've got Edouard playing, and they were the players that the Palace fans seemed to really want to see in the team. They were the ones, these are the ones that can light up the pitch. And the way Elise's played in the last couple of games, he thought, this could be tricky. This could be really tricky for us. And I think Eze clearly needs more games. I mean, he was anonymous last night, wasn't he? So I guess he's not quite there with his fitness yet. Elise, I think, barring a sort of 5-minute spell, didn't have a lot going on last night apart from, rolling around on the turf a bit. And I didn't really notice Edouard, to be fair. So that was pleasing from us. But certainly, yes, Elise was having a good go at winning, trying to win some free kicks last night. So somebody's got to sit in for Wilf, haven't they? And I think
going forward, I think he'll probably be the new Wilf, the figure of hate. Yeah. I mean, his start to his Palace career has been amazing. In dribs and drabs. Yeah. Because, you know, when he has started games, it's not been so good, like yesterday. But yeah, I think he will grow into the rivalry as well.
Oh, he will.
I think you're right. He doesn't quite understand it yet. But I think he's not done anything against us,
so we haven't got any reason to really get into him yet, have we?
No.
Clearly, over the years, he's scored enough goals, albeit a few penalties, but he's scored enough goals to make that.
Exactly. But I think Elise, he's got he's a similar sort of player to Wilfred in that, you know, it's very skillful, but also very different, because his passing, it's not just about dribbling with Elise. He's got the skills and stuff, but his passing is superb as well, I think. It's a matter of finding the right position for him within that team. And yeah. Eze, like you say, it's such a difficult injury to come back from. And, you know, I think just to see him playing this season is a bonus, actually. Like, even towards the end of the season, just if he was at this stage, would have been a bonus for Palace. That's how serious an injury it is. So if they can get him close to where he was last season, by the end of this season, then they'll have done a great job.
Okay. I feel very dirty for saying this, but Eze's quite likable.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to say that about Zaha? We're never going to say it about Elise, I would imagine. Certainly not about Gallagher or Hughes, but I do find Eze very likable. And I felt very sad for him when he got injured. And, not sad, maybe not sad, that's too much, but, you know, you sort of feel that's hard, isn't it?
He talked about in England terms as well, wasn't he, before he got injured?
Yeah, well, he got a call up for the squad. It was the last training session with Palace, and he came back and off just as he was going to be told that he was going to be called up for the Euros. Well, it's on standby to be in the Euro squad with England. Mm-hmm. That's when he got injured. Yeah. So really tough for him. But it needs to be given a bit of time, because if you rush those injuries, then it can be really bad.
Absolutely.
Okay. Before we move on, we just got to talk about the disallowed goal. Ed, thoughts?
Well, I just thought the referee should have disallowed it straight away. It was pretty obvious it was disallowed goal. I thought, I don't know if anyone argued with that or not. He had two hands on the ball.
Well, we do on principle.
He also, the other thing that was a dead giveaway that what should have been disallowed was his foot, just before, if you watch the frame, Mope's foot was almost directly going towards his head.
Yeah.
You know, so that it was pretty dangerous as well, I thought, as well as the contact with the ball. So
which was it that disallowed it? Was it the high foot, or was it the fact that VAR felt he kicked out, rightly or wrongly, kicked out of his hands?
I think it was the two hands thing, yeah, kicked out of his hand.
Right.
I don't think he had it completely under control though, which is my argument.
Yeah, but it was so quick that you couldn't have had it under control, you know, like.
I mean, like, I think you only have to have one hand on the ball now, which is
that's true as well. Yeah, you only have to have one.
A weird rule change which no one ever picked up on. But you can
certainly see why it was disallowed. I mean, we can argue this all like to the nth degree. And let's put it this way: if the boot was on the other foot, we'd be doing cartwheels, wouldn't we? So, you know, that was dangerous. Look how high that foot was. You know, hang on, Sanchez had that. Blah blah blah. So, you can certainly see why it was disallowed. And you know, those are the great things. And then even once you've got the laws themselves, it's always down to the interpretation of the referee, and the laws do say in the opinion of the referee. So, you know,
there we go. Okay, but you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on the podcast. And we are with you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us a shirt of the week. Vicky, do you want to have a go at describing this one for us?
Well, it is. I did a bit of a double take when I saw the sponsor's name on the front, but fortunately, it's not what I thought it was. So it's a red shirt with a kind of white band across the middle and loads of thinner white bands across the top. And it's got a sponsor called Yankee, Y-A-N-K-Y, on it, American Stores. I have absolutely no idea where it is, but I would guess probably something South American.
No.
I mean, surely is it too obvious that it's USA? I would say this. It looks like an ice hockey shirt. It looks like a style of shirt that you used to be able to pick up in Mothercare, because it looks like a shirt that, you know, your mum bought you as a three-year-old. What it doesn't look like is a football shirt.
I actually thought it looked, when I first saw it, it screamed Middlesbrough to me when I first saw it.
Yeah, me too. That's what I thought. Bernie Slaven.
Yes, but there's no badge on it either, is there? Unless Phil's been busy with the shopping.
Probably. But I'll put you out. This is what Phil has to say about this particular shirt. This is the 1987-88 home shirt of FC Emmen, who play in the Dutch Eerste Divisie, which is the second flight of football in Holland. The shirt sponsor, Yankee, was a chain of stores which are now since long gone. Their shirts are currently sponsored by Easy Toys, the purveyor of all manner of erotic gifts and gadgets. The team goes by the nickname of the Cannibals, and they are currently managed by the trickily named Dick Licken.
No, come on, hang on. This is a wind-up,
age. No, it's true. The side was formed in 1925 and entered professional leagues in 1985. They made the playoffs for promotion to the top flight 11 times before finally winning in 2018 and getting promoted to the Eredivisie for the very first time. Sadly, last season they finished 16th, and after drawing in a playoff match and then losing on penalties, they were relegated back to the Eerste Divisie. Home is the 8,600 capacity De Oude Meek Stadium in the city of Emmen, where they have been playing since it was built in 1977. An unremarkable history, their only honours being winning the Sunday Amateur Football League, the Hoofde Klasse, in 1974.
He's clearly making it up, isn't he?
In 1974. And the non-league in Holland really is called the Hoofde Klasse. There you go.
The Hoofde Klasse. I'm convinced. And I mean, the name of that manager, which we're not going to repeat. It's not even April the 1st. It's January the 15th. That's ridiculous. But, okay, thanks for that. Listen, this is Radio Reverb. It's a community radio station. We only exist by, we don't accept advertising. We only exist by donations, sponsorships and grants, and we're grateful that for the past 15 years Phil of oldfootballshirts.com has sponsored the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb. So in order for Reverb to continue, please, if you do feel like chucking a couple of shekels, anything that's left over from Christmas, just go to radioreverb.com, and there's a donate button there, and with that my dog just kicks off. go to the donate button and chuck a few quid in, just help keep this brilliant community radio station going. Yeah. And I would just say quickly, AD, apropos of last night, one more Brighton-based thing. There's a good friend of mine who I went to school with, a fellow called Will Jewell. He's a film producer and writer. He's got, I suppose, elevated in the world of films nowadays, where his film Concrete Plans is going to be shown on Film 4 this coming Wednesday. So that will be the Carry one, the 19th. Wednesday the 19th of January. It's going to be on Film 4 at 9 o'clock. So if you fancy supporting, just sit yourself down in front of the telly at 9 o'clock on Film 4 to watch Concrete Plans, written by West End Upper Season Ticket holder Will Jewell. And well done to you, Will. I say, it's a fellow I went to school with, so it's a shameless plug, but well done for getting onto the telly, mate.
Okay, Ed, you've got to go off and do some coaching in your very own Hoofter class there, haven't you?
I do, yeah. Thanks, yeah. It's my under-15s are waiting. Not waiting yet, but they will be. Thank you, guys. Yeah,
it's been great. Thanks for coming on to the Albion Roar, mate.
No worries,
mate.
Yeah,
all the best.
Look forward to next season.
But less so... football-wise.
Absolutely. No, you too, guys. Yeah, I'll see you soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, certainly will. Thanks for that, Ed.
Cheers.
Right. Vicky, we played in the cup last week. Did you have a good time?
I did, actually. Yeah, I foolishly... Well, no, it wasn't a great game for most of it, but it got better towards the end, and my biggest error was forgetting that everyone always... I've never been to West Brom before, and... people always say, don't they, it's very cold. It's always cold. So I looked at the weather forecast. It's going to chuck it down. So I prepared for rain, but not cold. And then I realised when I got there, that was a grave error. And it is true what they say, that West Brom is an extremely cold stadium. Not necessarily warmed up by the game for a lot of it. But once we got going, we dominated that game and surprisingly managed to score as a result of that dominance. So that was nice.
And we selected the strong team up there as well, which shows we're looking hopefully to take the competition seriously this year. But there was a debut for Odele Fire. How did he do for you?
Yeah, he did okay for the most of it. I think, you know, he was sort of getting into it, took a little bit to get into it. And I don't think his natural position is fullback either. So that was interesting. You know, I think from what I've read, he's generally a centre-half. And he ended up, he started the game, well, he finished the game, he was at right back for us, but no, he did pretty well. He was fine. We also had Sherpin in goal as well for his debut. He's massive.
Didn't someone say there's a picture of him alongside Dan Byrne?
Yeah, there is. It makes Dan Byrne look like a five-year-old.
It was like you or I standing there looking up at the Shard. Sherpin, it must have been very unusual for a debutant keeper to have a game where he literally did not have a save to make. He picked the ball out of the net. He couldn't do anything about the goal. And then that was it. They didn't have any shots at all. Not that dissimilar to last night, to be fair. I think Sanchez's only save was from Webster, wasn't it? It was decent. Sherpin looked pretty good. He looked very good with his feet. It was nice to see quite a strong team out. That was encouraging. I've seen a write-up in one of the papers recently suggesting that Brighton are one of the teams in this COVID hit season who should be taking the FA Cup seriously. As you know, when you look at Leicester last year, whoever wrote the article suggested that we are one of the teams that could consider ourselves a contender, which was, I've never really thought of it that way, but you know what? What the hell? Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the West Brom game in a minute then. I mean, but then, given that we're playing Spurs away and depends on which Spurs side turns up, do you see them as a major barrier to getting through to the fifth round?
I wouldn't call it a major barrier. Clearly they would be favourites on paper, but I think it is a game that you'd look at and think, all right, it's certainly not the worst draw. You know, your worst case scenario in that kind of draw is someone like Middlesbrough away, isn't it? A, because it's Middlesbrough and it's horrible, and also because, yeah, they're going quite well in the Championship. They fancy their chances. You know, I think with Spurs, well, it should have been an easy away trip in terms of transport. Clearly it's not. thank you very much, everyone. But I think it's winnable, because Spurs are like any club around the top six, aren't they? They're massively focusing on European qualification, or in their case, finishing above Arsenal.
I mean, Conte is famously a manager who takes the league more seriously than any cup competitions.
Yeah, and I don't really think, whatever you say, I don't think, with such as the intensity of the Premier League and the urgent need to win games, I just don't think I think the players can't help but just slightly switch the focus off a bit when it comes to the cup. When you're at a bigger club, I just think, I think even with us, you know, I went to the West Brom game almost kind of feeling relief, like a sense of relief. There's not the same degree of tension around the game that I feel with a league game. Oh, you've got to win, and you're looking at everyone else's results. Whereas with the FA Cup, it just kind of felt like a nice little break from that level of pressure.
There's a free hit,
I totally get that, Vic. And I mean, although this season it does seem that we're looking up rather than down for a change, which is not quite the same pressure as we've normally been under. Although this is Brighton, anything could happen. But
no, but the point is, Aidy, about that is that we're in our first two or three seasons in being in the Premier League, is that we used to have what we call, and I've just used the phrase there, we used to have a free hit. You know, we're playing Chelsea, we're playing Spurs, we're playing Arsenal, we're not expected to get a result out of it. So let's see if we can actually just sort of play as well as we can. But as each of those seasons has gone on, and here we are in our fifth season, those games are not the free hits that we thought, because we know that they are winnable. We have beaten... With the exception, who haven't we beaten in the top six? Just Chelsea. Apart from that,
Chelsea.
We've
drawn with them.
But my point is, and even then, our results and our performances are getting better. He said, looking ahead to Tuesday, knowing we're going to get stuff for saying that. But yeah, you know, and it's just in those early seasons, we could barely lay a glove on those top six. And now we're competing, as Ed said earlier, we're going toe-to-toe with them. And our midfield is as good as any in the entire Premier League. So I think that, you know, Vicky's point with the not feeling the pressure, because you think, well, OK, if we're not in the FA Cup, fine, fair enough. And it does sound ridiculous when we can say we can concentrate on the league, because there is still that innate fear. I have it to an extent that others don't. But I still have that certain concern that, you know, relegation is still, a small option in our season. I think that the real hope for us is for actually the opportunity that we finally got to us finish in our record position. And I know those two, you know, opinions are juxtaposed. You know, we could finish in our highest ever position or we could still go down. So the whole notion for me of having a good cup run, it seems to be a bit of an anathema, especially when we got to the semi-final two or three years ago and, you know, had to then rely on Crystal Palace to keep us in the Premier League. So it's a funny old thing, that the FA Cup. But sorry, go on, Vic.
I was going to say, for me, I still can't quite shift the mentality of, and I'm sure I'm not the only one here, the Brighton fans' mentality of, yes, of course, it's, you know, you look around you on the table and you think, great, but I still find myself looking at the bottom three and you know, when they win, you think, oh, how close. I've just looked at the table because I must admit I didn't last night, and we're actually 17 points clear of the bottom three. Only have got a few games in hand there, but I'm still, you know, and actually for us to have 28 points at this stage, theoretically, you know, what, another 7 points, another three wins, and we're safe. Well, okay, but then the Brighton fan in me says, "Well, what if we didn't? What if we lose all our? Yeah. What if we go on a losing run?" And actually, there's no way this team should. And again, and going back to the Palace game, I think that was a big difference for me in the performance of the team last night against the Palace game last season. Yes, they were both dominant performances, but I felt like last season when Palace got their goal, the first goal, our heads dropped. And it was like it felt like the kick in the teeth again. And we've not scored, and now they've scored. Whereas last night, actually, we didn't really drop our levels. I think when they scored that goal, the team looked more confident. All right, we only got the one goal, but it was a point, and there seems to be a better mentality now. But yeah, I still, you know, in my mind, the Brighton fan of me is still going, well, could we go down? Could we go down? And actually, no one's talking about Wolves or Leicester or Palace going down, and they're the three teams below us. No one's talking about Aston Villa going down, and they are five places below us. No one is talking about Villa going down. We probably should allow ourselves to relax, but I don't think we ever will, because that's just us, isn't it? That's just the legacy of being a Brighton fan.
But Vicky, I mean, obviously you were talking about the that heads dropping last season, and but obviously the amount of goals we're scoring in the 85th minute plus this season, it builds belief that we're always in it and we'll keep going to the last kick of the game. And you know, I mean, we didn't actually talk about it. I mean, if Danny Welbeck's header had gone in, I mean, what a goal that would have been, by the way. If that were, I mean, it would have been a very different mood.
I'm sure that the Amex would have detonated, mate.
It was, but I mean, it's just those sheer number of late goals. I mean, it does build belief, and it does mean that we're always going to be in a game. 1-0 is, you're always in it, aren't you?
Yeah, and. Yeah, I think there is that little bit. I mean, you know, there's a part of me again that thinks, well, you know, we've had this run of getting all these late equalisers. Someone's going to do it to us at some point. But then I think we've had that in other games anyway, in previous seasons, you know, when other teams, when we were leading and we weren't holding on to those leads. And certainly, like, you know, I think that if one thing was clear with Palace last season, and that's perhaps what was making me think we might get a goal here, is that they haven't proved to be very good at holding on to leads. You know, that's one of the things that they've done. They did it against us. They did it against Arsenal. You know, it's they don't seem to be able to cling on to it. So that was, I suppose, always there in the background. And so it proved. But yeah, there must be a little bit of confidence in the team. And one of these days, you know, they'll start getting some more winners as well.
To consider from that is that even on our 12-match unwinning run, you know, 12 matches without a victory, we still kept the scoreboard ticking over, whereas once upon a time, you know, that would have been sort of a real slump. But yeah, we were picking up those draws, as it were. And so the scoreboard, it's clear that when you're at the bottom, a draw is, you know, often not good enough. But when you're mid-table, it seems to keep you afloat there. That's good enough. Obviously, you want the wins in order to push on and to certainly make certain. But there's that. And the other point I was going to make is that I don't think that our goals for tally is particularly great. I think it might even be less than last year. What the major difference is our goals against tally is so much better. And but for the Man City sticking four past us, you know, it would be amazing and actually sort of, you know, very much competing with the top three of City, Liverpool and Chelsea. So it gives you an example, the fact that it's the stats are now telling you what everyone else has known. Yeah. Just score more goals. Once we've done that, I mean, it's not going to be the be all and end all because we still have to keep progressing every single other area. But, you know, score those goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I always say, and I said it on here, just every single player, all they need to do is add two more to their tally for the year. And you watch how the results differ.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the January window is open and we're obviously still looking for that elusive 20-goal season striker, which everyone else wants.
I still think we've got him here.
But I mean, Vicky, you did get to have a look at Evan Ferguson last week. What did you make of him?
Yeah, I think he was really unlucky with one chance. I don't know whether you saw it on the TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He just got a toe on it ahead of the keeper, and he'd even gone off with his arms in the air. And we all thought it was going in, it's going, just dropped over. And must admit, we were absolutely gutted for him. Is he 17? That would have been amazing for him to tip that in. He looked pretty decent. He seems to be in the right place. Let's not put too much pressure on him. We don't want him to end up like other potential stars, but you know he had for the time he had on the pitch, he looked like he knew what he was doing.
But anyway, that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you to Vicky Rees, thank you to Alan Wares and to Ed Ahrens. But this has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We see you again next week.